This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. It's writer-editor Matt Larkin here, to my left with his customary can of Diet Coke, is senior writer Ken Campbell. Across from me with his not customary giant bottle of water is associate senior writer Ryan Kennedy.
He's going to have to go for a pee before we finish, I bet.
And it means already half empty.
So well, not if I finish the water.
I guess that's true. And everyone...
True, you could, yeah, just pee in the bottle. Yeah, beautiful.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. I've always intended.
I've always wanted to pee in a bottle, but I just don't trust myself to get everything in there. I just don't trust my aim.
You can't even hit the toilet.
I can do that. This podcast went downhill quickly. My God, we're at 45, 46 seconds in, and we're talking about peeing in a bottle. Yeah. And this is why, as Ken said right before we started, this is his favorite moment of the week. Isn't that adorable?
It is. It really is. It's my favorite work moment of the week.
All right. He said moment.
My favorite moment of the week is canoodling with my wife on Friday night on the couch.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. TMI. All right. What do you say we talk some hockey?
Yes.
What do you say, boys?
All right. The team, okay, I'm going to try another fun transition here. The division that no other division wants to canoodle with is the Metropolitan Division. If you look at the top of the standings, the overall standings is littered with teams from the Metro. You got the Capitals, the Flyers have won 9 in a row, the Penguins, the Rangers, the Blue Jackets. And we always talk about the Central being the ultimate shark tank division, but has the Metropolitan surpassed it? And is this now the best division in all of hockey?
Without question, Mr. Larkin. And you know what? You know what's funny is Columbus is actually the second best team in terms of winning percentage in the NHL right now. Because they played so few games, they're down the pack. But, I mean, the Metro Sectional Division has, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. They've got five of the top six teams in terms of winning percentage. They've got 6 of the top 10 scorers. I think 5 of the top 10 points per game, guys. I mean, they've got star power. They, in December alone, I was looking this up, the Metro Division has gone 32-7-5, teams in the Metro Division. That includes, like, Carolina and New Jersey and the Islanders and everything. And of the 5 losses they've had, or sorry, of the 7 losses in regulation they've had, 5 of them have been to other teams in the Metro Division.
Jeez.
So, they're, like, 17 and... Like, the top 5 teams are, like, 17-0-1 in the last little while. You know, Philly's on, what, a 7-game winning streak? Or 9-game winning streak. Columbus is on a 6-game winning streak, and Pittsburgh's on a 5-game winning streak. Like, Pittsburgh, I was talking about this today. Like, they're going... Mike Sullivan, by the way, was hired 1 year ago today to coach the Penguins. So I was writing a blog on this, and they go into their game tonight with a 5-game winning streak. They're not even the hottest team in their division.
Yeah.
Washington's, what, 17-6 and something, and
they're in the wild card.
Yeah, they're in the wild card.
They're scratching
right
and clawing.
Yeah. What I think is interesting about a couple of these teams is that the questions we had coming into the season have essentially been answered. You look at the Philadelphia Flyers, and even early in the season, it's like, who's their goalie? Well, it's Steve Mason. Yeah. We know that now.
Yeah.
You know, Mason's hot. You know, he had struggles early on, turned around. Michael Neuwirth was kind of holding them back for a while there, but that hasn't been a problem recently. With the New York Rangers, it was kind of like, who is this team? Who's going to score? Apparently, everybody's going to score. And I actually mentioned this in a blog today. Their 8 top forwards all have 17 points already. At least.
Wow.
Like, incredible depth there. And then you look at Columbus, and I mean, the question was, what do they have anything? And as it turns out, they have it all. They've got the depth. They're playing amazing third-period hockey, a.k.a. John Tortorella's skate-him-into-the-ground training camp has actually worked.
Yeah, and their fitness level has been a factor this year. No question.
And then they rest. They don't do morning skates.
They bring up Oliver Bjorkstrand, and he likes him, but he doesn't think he's fit enough.
Mm.
And so you've got to be a player who has endurance to play for this team.
Right.
And I think you're right, Brian. I think it is showing up in their third periods.
Yeah. And not only that, but Sergei Bobrovsky back to Vezina caliber goaltending. Zach Werenski, potential Calder winner, or at least definitely a nominee. So you've got strength at every position, and all of a sudden you have, like we say, like a almost unstoppable team right now.
It's interesting,
and we haven't
too,
even talked about the Rangers yet.
Yeah, like, that's right.
Except when I talked about the Rangers.
Oh, you did. That's right. I didn't. I wasn't really listening. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny for a story for our next issue of THN, the magazine form, the paper form, which still exists, everybody.
It's like us talking on paper.
That's right. Yeah. It's paper talking.
It's like us talking, but on paper.
But on paper. I actually spoke to Sergei Bobrovsky last week and Jaromír Kekalainen, the GM of the Jackets, and it doesn't seem to be a coincidence that Bobrovsky's playing so much better. And what they did with him was they realized he had all these groin strains, but they went to a doctor, and the doctor said that he didn't have scar tissue building up, so there was still hope for him, and the problem was more the result of the way he plays and the muscle mass he had in his body, because he's a gym rat. So he changed his diet, and he lost about 20 pounds in the offseason, so he's more flexible now, he's more limber, and so far so good. He's actually playing more games than ever, which seems backwards, but Columbus is sort of monitoring the schedule, and they've had breaks between games, and they think it's safe, but it's interesting. His numbers look exactly like the Vezina numbers now.
You know what, too? I'm waiting for... Well, maybe it won't happen, but... The Islanders are better than this, right? And they've been okay lately. They're 3-1-1 in their last five. You know, if they start to pick it up a little bit and make a bit of a race here, you know, it could be interesting.
Definitely. My worry about the Islanders is that because of the strength of division up top, they don't have anywhere to go.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can't get a wild card spot if five teams in your division are already occupying those slots. And just with the start, I'd agree, you know, I mean, they shut out Washington not long ago, and I thought they played very well, capitalizing on turnovers, but it seems like they almost might have too much ground to make up already.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting, too, because to me, what really throws a wrench into it is the Atlantic Division now. There's no way into the wild card. If you look at the teams in the Atlantic, the fourth place team in the Atlantic now, which I think is Tampa Bay, the last time I checked, is well out of a playoff spot because, or at least on the wild card side, the only way to get in for some
of
these teams is going to be in your division.
Yeah, it's 7 points.
Yeah, so you're going to see teams in the Atlantic. You're going to see some decent teams. If this keeps up, there could be a decent team in the Atlantic, a fourth place team in the Atlantic that can't get into the playoffs because the Metro has been that dominant. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, top to bottom. I mean, New Jersey's decent team. Carolina, I think, is a team on the rise. So, like, this isn't a fluke here. This is a good group of teams, and one that, you know, I mean, and I think lately, I think we're noticing it lately because they're not playing each other right now. They're in a part of the schedule where they're playing teams from the other conference and other divisions. So you're looking at them, and it's like they're winning all the time because they're not playing each other. So that means they must be the best teams in the league because they're beating everybody.
It's interesting. And, you know, I keep going back to Tampa Bay because they're the team we picked to win the Stanley Cup. And we still see a roster that has a lot of talent with or without Steven Stamkos. But you have to worry looking at them right now because of those injuries and because they're scratching and clawing. They're currently out of a playoff position. And it makes me wonder. You know, last year, they, I think, correctly held on to Steven Stamkos all year. Even if they hadn't re-signed him, they treated him like a UFA trade deadline rental that helped them pursue a Stanley Cup. They obviously didn't know about his blood clot at the time, so it worked. And going into the season, I felt like the logic with goaltender Ben Bishop, it worked the same way. You keep him because you're a cup contender, he's your starter. Even if you lose him to the expansion draft or to free agency, it's still worth it. But now, you got Andrei Vasilevskiy, he's outplaying Bishop so far. His contract has extended 3 more years. He's obviously the goalie of the future. And this Lightning team needs help right now, so I'm starting to wonder, does Steve Yzerman have to rethink things and explore a Ben Bishop trade right now?
Well, I think that's an idea that has merit. I don't know if it would reek of a desperation move at this point. Like, they're not, you know, they're not that far behind Boston. They're like a point or they might even
they're
be
right
high.
There.
Yeah, they're
right there
with Boston. And then, I mean, all you need in that shitty division is a good run, and you know, you're right back in the middle of things, right? So, I'm just not sure that it would cure what ails the Tampa Bay Lightning. I've watched them play a little bit lately. They're dreadful in their own end. Like, they're scary bad in their own end. Like, even Brian Boyle said, I wish that I could play against us. So he said something like that.
Jeez.
The way we play in our own end, I'd love to play against us. And so I'm not sure that doing that would be what you need at the moment. And I still think you need that experience. You need that guy that if you do get on that run and you start to maybe flirt with the playoffs, and then, you know, as long as you're in, once Stamkos gets back at the around the trade deadline, you know, you may be looking at a team that can do some damage still.
Yeah, and that's that's how I'm sort of looking at it, is you're getting Stamkos back. And it is almost like getting a free number one center, top line player at the trade deadline. You don't even have to lose an asset. If you can just sort of like push through to that point, and I think you can, because you're looking at some flawed teams in your division. Pretty much every team in that division is flawed to one extent or another.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Ottawa's vulnerable. Boston, I think I have a little more faith in Boston than Ottawa, but not a ton. I mean, Patrice Bergeron, he's obviously going to get more points than he has right now, and that will certainly help. But I think if you can just get past this portion, figure out why you're playing so bad in your own zone. Maybe just the fact that when Stamkos comes back, it takes less pressure off the triplets and other folks. That kind of helps itself. I would be worried about upsetting this ship, because you know this is the last go-around for this specific crew, because it's pretty much going to be impossible to keep Bishop and re-sign him for next season. So if you're going to do it with this cast, which is a pretty strong cast on paper, I think you got to see it through one more time.
And I'm going to go the other way. And I think because the window is shrinking, not shrinking, I mean, the Lightning are going to be good for a long time, but they have a good chance to win the Cup this year. I still think they do. I think you want to make sure you take nothing for granted. You don't take the schedule for granted. You know right now it's going to be hard to get in as a wildcard team, maybe only on the Atlantic side. And by the time Stamkos comes back, the team could be out of it. I think goaltending, having two starting caliber goaltenders right now, is a luxury. They have areas of need. Like you said, Ken, they're bad in their own end. So to me, you take a Ben Bishop and you see if you can trade him for a defenseman, maybe a pending unrestricted free agent defenseman. The example, I blogged about this last week. The example I used was, let's say you trade him to the Dallas Stars, who desperately need goaltending. You take back an expiring contract, so both teams are trading expiring guys. Let's say you get a Johnny Oduya, who's got great experience and is decent in his own end. He fits into your top four. You still take a veteran goalie back in the deal, like an Antti Niemi or Kari Lehtinen, so it's not all on Andrei Vasilevskiy. And I think that tandem with Vasilevskiy as a starter is still quite good. Because if Lehtinen or Niemi is your backup, that's fine if they're a backup goalie, if they're not dependent on to win playoff games. To me, that's the way Tampa Bay should be thinking, because you don't want to waste. They have a team that can win the Stanley Cup this year, but if they get cocky about it and think, now we're going to be fine, like the way LA does some certain years, what if they wake up and all of a sudden they're ninth place and it's too late and they miss a good chance to pursue a cup this year?
You know what, Matt? You make a lot of good points, and I'm coming around on it, but I just can't imagine that trading Ben Bishop for Johnny Oduya and Antti Niemi is going to suddenly make the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Well, there's other stuff. They're going to get some more. They're also throwing in Hendrickson and the guy.
Yeah. No, but that's the only thing. Those are all good points. I just, in the grand scheme of things, I'm just not sure that a move like that would be one that moves the needle all that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my worry would be, what if Vasilevskiy gets hurt and you have to go into the playoffs with Lehtinen or Niemi as your goaltender?
Hey, Dallas Stars still got to within one game of the conference final, so you know,
you can get by.
Yeah. All right. Switching over to the Western Conference right now, I keep doing a double take when I look at the standings, especially the Central Division. I don't know why, I just was not a believer in this Minnesota Wild team going into the season. I thought they were just a bit talent deficient compared to the other Central juggernauts. But then again, they had the magical fairy dust of Bruce Boudreau, the turnaround man. I don't know what that means, but he's the turnaround artist. He comes in every time he takes over a team, he magically seems to make them better. Do you guys believe in this Wild team? They've lost once in their last 10 games in regulation. Are they real? Is Boudreau doing it again, or what do you think?
I think Devin Dubnyk's doing it again.
Yeah.
I really believe in Devin Dubnyk. I think, like, he's my choice for the Vezina Trophy this year, mm-hmm. the way he's mm-hmm. played. I mean, the effect that he's had on that team has been phenomenal, and I think there's two guys that have really energize this team. I think one of them is Dubnyk, the way he's played, and the other one is Eric Staal with the comeback season that he's had.
Yeah.
I don't know. I watched them play last week in Toronto. They don't have a big wow factor for me. Like, I watch Zach Parise now, and it's like, wow, it's contract's not looking so good anymore because he's just worn down, right? Mm-hmm. And he's an older guy who's relied on a speed game for a long time, and that speed is not maybe not there anymore. You know, Ryan Suter's still plugging away and doing pretty well, but I don't know. I mean, I think they're okay, and they could make some noise, but I like what Bruce has done. I think you're right. I think he comes in originally and has that, you know, that oomph factor to him, and he has yet to carry it through to the playoffs, as we've all seen with a lot of his teams. But, you know, I mean, that's the kind of coach that this team needed. They needed someone that was an optimist, someone who, you know, who the players would play for. And I think they got the right guy behind the bench. But right now, I think it's almost all of it is due to the fact that Devin Dubnyk's been the Vezina Trophy favorite for me, and probably could be in the conversation in the Hart Trophy.
Mm-hmm. My worry with this team is, what are they going to look like in March or April? You know, you mentioned about Parise getting worn down. Eric Staal is an older player with a lot of miles on him. Chris Stewart is a big-bodied player with a lot of, you know, wear and tear on him. What does this team look like? You know, we were speaking earlier about Columbus and how great their fitness is. Can all those older players, Ryan Suter included, what are they going to look like after 82 games?
Right.
I mean, I definitely think they're for real in the regular season, and this could be a very tragically ironic Bruce Boudreaux campaign where, through no fault of his own, his team dies in the first round or two of the playoffs simply because, like, they run up against a younger, faster team that can expose them.
Well, or a big, strong team that just grinds them into the ice.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, maybe they hook up with Anaheim and that's like the matchup from hell for them or something along those lines. That would be my concern, is that I was weary of how this team was built in terms of long-term success. And in the short term, obviously, it's looking great, and, you know, you got a lot of great veteran players there. But that would be my concern, is they're not built for today's Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm. Like, you look and you go, okay, could they beat Chicago in a 7-game series? Yeah, not so sure. Could they beat St. Louis in a 7-game series? Maybe, but I doubt it. Could they beat LA? Could they beat San Jose? Could they beat Anaheim in a 7-game series? I mean, we're running out of teams that they're not going to play against in the first round, right?
Yeah. They could probably beat Nashville right now.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm with you guys on that one. I think they're, I mean, especially if you look at the real definition of the award, the Hart Trophy, most valuable to his team, I think Devin Dubnyk has probably been the most valuable player to his team so far. And the possession numbers are below average this season for Minnesota. They're closer to the bottom of the league, especially on the defensive side of the puck.
Yeah.
The problem is Dubnyk, his stats are so great. Even if he regresses a little bit from amazing to just excellent, that could make Minnesota start to lose games.
Only elite.
Yeah, only elite.
Right.
So I'm worried about them. I wouldn't be even that surprised if they ended up having to grind just to make the playoffs. So I'm still, color me skeptical.
Well, they might have to grind just to make the playoffs as it is. I mean, it's not a given, right, at this point.
True.
That's right. Although Ken Holland wants it to be with the play-in game, right? Then it's a given for everybody.
Hooray! Everybody gets a participation badge.
It's funny. I was so bad. My minor, like in my house league days, I was so bad that I was once on a last place team that made the playoffs and made the final.
Wow.
Because every team got everybody's in the playoffs.
Yeah.
What a joke.
You know what I think is hilarious in these games? Like, because I coach my kids' team and I've coached them for years, but like once it gets past a 5-goal margin, they stop adding goals when the team scores. So, like our kids, like, do they think the kids are a bunch of doofuses? Oh, we're only down 9-4. We're not down 33-4. We're only down 9-4. And then when we get one, they get another one. So now we're down 10-5. Like,
that's tough math.
They must think kids are dumb.
That's Sisyphean when you think about it, where it's like, hey, we got a goal. Oh, we've gotten no further than
we Yeah, that's right. We just play on.
Makes me think about, like, the early Olympic Games when, like, Canada would drill Switzerland, like, 70-1. Like, what were those Swiss guys doing? Were they just like, well, it's a new sport to us. Like, this is interesting. I guess this is how it goes.
Watch these guys. Look how good they are.
How do you even have time to score 70 goals? Like, literally, how do you get down the ice 70 times?
It was ever that much of a
Look at the
There were some games with even worse.
Like 30, I'm thinking.
No, there were some games
like
118 or something. I could be lying. I could look it up after.
I feel like 118 was maybe like a women's game,
possibly
like Slovakian. Yeah.
Yes, that's the one I'm thinking of. And I remember thinking, how do you have time?
You have to like
how
win the draw, go drill it, and then line up again, win the draw, drill a puck in the net. Like,
yeah.
That's like one goal every 30 seconds.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
To switch gears entirely with the complete non sequitur, who do you guys think is going to win the Norris Trophy this year?
Brent Burns.
Brent Burns?
Yeah.
This is you're going to think this is hilarious coming from me, but I think it's either Brent Burns or Eric Carlson.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Ryan Kennedy is like an Eric Carlson. I'm not going to say hater, but
no,
he's
truther.
Pretty anti Eric Carlson.
Yeah, well, my main beef is that I feel that in the past there haven't been a lot of stakes for Eric Carlson because his Ottawa teams have been either bad or just kind of mediocre, and if they make the playoffs, it's usually when he has a little less in the points department. When he has his Norris years, it's always when they miss the playoffs, and to me that's kind of like anathema to success. But what I will say this year, right now, Ottawa's in the playoffs. Eric Carlson leads the league in points by a defenseman. Burns is not far behind. But I would... this is going to sound so arrogant. I'd be fine if he won the Norris Trophy this year. I feel it's a bit of a different situation.
You wouldn't lodge a protest.
Exactly. I wouldn't hold my nose.
I'd tolerate it.
Although he's had some whoppers... whopper giveaways,
which I point out to Matt every time it happens because Matt loves Eric Carlson, and again, like, I acknowledge that Eric Carlson is a fantastic defenseman. My sort of beef is, like, it specifically says the Norris Trophy is for the best all-around defenseman in the game. I think other players have been better than him. But I think if you look at what he has to do in Ottawa, I feel like, you know, his possession numbers aren't great.
Yeah, they've gone down this year, actually.
Yeah, but it's not like he's got a lot of help around him. I still think Burns kind of makes sense, but I also know how the voting crowd can be out there. They raw points, and
that drives me nuts because like Brent Burns should not be penalized for the fact that he doesn't have to play defense because he's always got the puck. Mm-hmm. Like, he's always got the puck when he's out there. He controls the whole game.
Yeah.
And he's always got the puck, and he's always moving it, and he's always making things happen, and he scores, and he shoots, and he's got a great possession numbers. Like it's not his fault that he dominates the game so much that he doesn't play defense. I mean, that's part of playing defense, as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. I'm with you all the way, and it's why I've been a big Carlson fan, although this year Carlson wouldn't be my Norris pick, oddly enough. But to me, the definition of the Norris, all-around, and to me, all-around doesn't just mean pure defense. It means all-around defenseman, as in all-around impact on the game. And the guys like Carlson and Burns, the puck is always flying in the other direction. The puck's always in the other team's zone. So their impact on shot attempts at their own net is so strong that I consider that all-around play. I get the counter-argument that it says defense by offense, but to me, it's just, what is the end result? The end result is Carlson's on the ice. Yeah. Most of the pucks are going at the other net. And to me, I love that impact. I think this year, I'm more of a Burns guy. But I was looking into the analytics, and a guy who surprised me this year, he's always good offensively, but on the defensive side, watch out for Kevin Shattenkirk.
I was thinking,
His shot suppression numbers are among the best in the league, and he plays big minutes. Not as many minutes as Burns, so Burns would actually be my pick right now. Mm-hmm. But Shattenkirk is having a sneaky good season, and he's kind of a reminder that, you know, the definition of defenseman has really changed. It's mobility and positioning and gap control, that kind of stuff.
Another guy's having a kind of a sneaky good season is Duncan Keith, too. A guy that has won before, and you kind of go, well, yeah, okay, well. But he's been pretty good, too.
Yeah. And if I can go off on a bit of a tangent, something I've noticed lately, which I think is kind of fascinating for the game itself, is that a lot of prospect defensemen, a lot of young defensemen right now are undersized. And it'll be interesting to see when they get to the pro level what kind of impact they have. We had a blog post up just the other day about Ryan Merkley, who was the number one overall pick in the OHL draft this summer, went to the Guelph Storm. Not a big kid. He's probably like 5'10", 5'11". But the wizardry he has with the puck. He scored just an incredible goal.
Yeah.
And then I was watching.
Check it out if you haven't seen it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and then I caught the end of that game. And, you know, it went to overtime. He got the puck off the draw. Beautiful stretch pass to Giovanni Smith, the Red Wings pick. And then Merkley was there to pick up the rebound, win the game 15 seconds in. Just an incredible skater. There's a kid, Kale McCarr, playing at the World Junior A Challenge right now. Again, he's only about 5'10", 5'11", but the way he handles the puck is just incredible. David Quenneville, the Islanders pick with Medicine Hat, 38 points through 31 games.
Jeez.
He's 5'8".
Wow.
But he can skate. He can. The stretch passes are amazing. So are we going to start seeing a lot more of these sort of Jared Spurgeon-type defensemen where they're undersized, but they do all those things that win you games and get you those great possession numbers because they're always pushing the puck the right way? When do we see that size bias correct itself and finally have teams say, like, look, if he's always got the puck, he can play on my team?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very interesting.
Joining us now on the podcast is the proud owner of a 9-game winning streak, head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. Please welcome Mr. Dave Haxtell. Dave, how you doing?
Doing well, Matt. How are you today?
Good, good. I'm guessing not as good as you guys because the streak, 9 games, you guys are on fire. What do you think is so special about this team, Dave? Because I look at the roster turnover from last year, and it's not like you guys brought in big-ticket free agents or made major roster changes, but you see this team is really clicking, and what do you think it is?
It's just, you know, it's kind of a continuation, really, of what the group did, you know, down the last couple of months last year. It's just it's a group of guys that they show up and they work hard every day. They play pretty hard for one another. And really, I think, you know, for us over the last 20 games, our consistency has been pretty good. I think we all know, I mean, the winning, the difference between winning and losing is, it's pretty slight on any given night. It can be a bounce here or a one play there, but for the most part, our guys have been doing the right things and playing hard for one another.
And when the Flyers first brought you in last year, it was a very interesting hire because you were the first coach hired right out of the NCAA since Herb Brooks, 1987, I believe, the Minnesota North Stars. Was there a unique flavor or something you took with you from the North Dakota years that you applied to the Flyers, sort of a college touch to the NHL?
No, I wouldn't say there was any type of a college touch. I just tried to bring the same approach that myself and our staff at North Dakota would bring to the rink every day. I think, a similarity here is that, you know, inside of our coach's room, we've got really good people, just hardworking guys that show up. And it kind of starts there, I think, with an honest effort every day by the coaching staff. And hopefully you can continue that and carry that on to your players.
And having that distinction of being the first direct from college hire in many years, is that something you're kind of aware of? And is it kind of a point of pride for you?
Well, it would be impossible to not be, you know, aware of it, but it's not something that I really have given a whole lot of thought to, I'll be very honest with you. I'm proud that, I've been given the opportunity and a little bit humbled by that, Mr. Snyder, Ron Hextall, everybody here in the Philadelphia organization, to give me the opportunity to coach at the NHL level, but more importantly, to be part of this organization, which, I think we have an opportunity for success as we continue to build. And for me, that's the thing, I guess, that I concentrate on most is, you know, on a daily basis, what we have to do to try to be successful.
And for you personally, flashing back to last year, what do you think is the biggest difference just when you walked in on day one of training camp in terms of what you learned last year, and did you feel different?
Well, just that could, in a sense, just that day one, it was new, something that I hadn't experienced before, and I think that's probably the theme for me as I went through year one is just, you know, it's not the big things, it's not the obvious things that are different, more so it's the small details that you run into on a day to day basis that you have to figure out, you have to learn. You have to grow with, and You know, I was very fortunate. I am fortunate to have some great guys around me here in our coaches' room, some real good people in our locker room. And, you know, those are the people that helped me with the transition, making it through year one and learning and growing along the way.
And if you look at the standings, I mean, I'm sure you're thrilled with the big winning streak. You guys are on fire. You're rising up the standings. You look at the goals against department. You guys are still allowing, on the season, you've allowed a fair amount of goals. You're scoring a ton of goals. But with, you know, Steve Mason in particular starting to find his form, do you think that even though this team's on fire, there's still another gear? And do you guys think you can even get better than what you're doing right now?
Well, you know, the streak has no bearing on anything that we're doing on a daily basis. It's, you know, we're trying to accomplish something, and obviously, number one, much like everybody in the league, you know, you work the entire regular season to become a playoff team, and that's not a small feat. That's one thing I certainly learned last year. So every time you can gain 2 points, it's 2 points, you know, towards that goal. To put yourself in the best position possible, as you work towards the playoffs. But you know, for us, I evaluate really our last over our last 20 games. I think we've 18 to 20 games. We've been a pretty consistent hockey team. We've been better without the puck. In terms of the number of, not just the number of goals we're giving up, but more importantly, the number of opportunities we're giving up. We're a little bit better there. I'm very happy with our effort defensively. We certainly can continue to get better. One of the things that right now, as I look over our last two or three games, that we can be better defensively by simply being better with the puck. We're giving it up a little bit too easily right now. And, you know, for that reason, we're having to spend a lot of energy, playing defensives, on the defensive side of the puck. So, but there's so many areas that our, you know, team will concentrate on and continue to get better, and that's what, you know, that's part of the regular season as well, working to get better.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a hotter player on the planet right now than Jacob Voracek, and to me it's an interesting story because last year, you know, he did have that down year. Do you think it's a case of, was Jacob just sort of snake-bitten last year, or did you guys work on something specific or discuss something, even if it was mental, in the off season that sort of got him back on track this year?
No, that's all, you know, Jake's inner drive. I think a lot is made of his down year last year. I think he didn't get off to the start that he wanted to last year, and maybe that snowballed a little bit with some of the attention that it drew in and around the league. In reality, Jake still had a pretty good year numbers wise last year. At a critical time of year, he was very good for us. But I think he came back with a real mindset this year, to make sure that he got off to a good start, and he did that from day one of training camp. Coming back after the World Cup, he was at a very high level, and he's maintained that all the way through. So that's just his inner pride and his inner drive, and he's obviously in a pretty good groove right now, but he's worked for it, and right now he's getting everything that he deserves. He's working for it.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave. Much appreciated. Thanks for joining us today, and good luck with the streak going forward and the rest of the season, too.
All right. Appreciate it, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Well, thanks, fellas. It's time for the final part of the podcast, the best part, the dessert, if you will. It's Wuzzy a Ranger.
Ken and I both saw Office Christmas Party on the weekend, so.
All right. Yeah. How many stars?
Out of how many? Five?
Out of four. If you're a movie four. Buff like me, the true rating system is 4 stars. Okay. It's not 5.
I'd give it maybe 2 and change. I don't
two
know.
And a half?
I would go...
I'm not sure if I'd go that high. 2 and a little bit.
I would say 3 because it delivered what I wanted.
Ah, okay.
Yes. It's not Citizen Kane, but it's TJ Miller and a bunch of other funny people being funny.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could tell there were, like, large swaths of that movie where they were just, like, riffing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they were just, like, going off on their own thing.
Yeah, and I enjoyed
it. That was good. Some of it was good. Yeah.
All right, good. Okay, I'm going to lead it off for you guys. Dave Christian, was he a Ranger?
I'm going to say yes.
I'm also going to say yes.
Yeah.
And you fell into my trap. He was not a Ranger. I don't know what that was.
Okay, I will go with the well-traveled Brent Ashton.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to deconstruct Ken's logic. I think Ken thought this up and said, okay, I'm gonna throw up the guy that played for a million teams.
Right.
They're going to fall for it and think he was a Ranger, but he wasn't a Ranger. I'm gonna say Brent Ashton, not a Ranger.
I'm going to say he was a Ranger. Just, I feel like Ken thought you would think that.
And this is like the Princess Bride.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Inconceivable.
You would think that.
Yeah. So I'm going to say Brent Ashton was a Ranger.
Actually, Matt's getting quite good at this. Yeah. Of the 9 teams that Brent Ashton played for, none were the New York Rangers.
Well, there you go.
Boom.
All right. Finally. The Professor, Igor Larionov.
Not a Ranger.
I don't have any memory of him being a Ranger.
Not a Ranger.
I'm going not a Ranger.
Not a Ranger. Woo! You are correct.
Wow, we all picked guys who weren't Rangers.
Yeah, we weren't feeling it.
See,
today.
I had my initial one. I thought it was going to be too easy, so I didn't go with that. I was going to say Matthew Barnaby.
He was a Ranger.
Yeah.
I almost did Matthew Barnaby today, too.
Yeah.
And then I was like, people, I can picture him in a Ranger's jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can picture him in the jersey, then he's too obvious of a Ranger.
Yeah, it's pretty easy, yeah.
All right, well, thanks, fellas, and thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back next week with another podcast for you.